Roll record.
Great drive from Rocky Wells. He doesn't mind throwing a leg over the ball just quite.
He might be out of play for a little while.
Yes, hello and welcome to Football, the Wednesday / Thursday edition of the Fox Football Podcast. I hope you all noted our new intro containing some classic commentary from the one and only, the late, great Mike Cockerell, and also the famous leg-over comments from Andy Harper and Brenton Speed that we had last week. I'm Murray Shaw. Today is a big, and as you can probably tell from my voice, a very exciting day in the history of Australian football as we say hello and welcome two new teams to the Hyundai A-League in Western Melbourne and MacArthur, Southwest Sydney. They join the league with the former coming in next season and the latter the season after, and that will dominate the discussion today. And joining me, as always, is Brenton Speed and Andy Harper. I'll start with you, Speedy. How are you? Are you as pumped as I am?
Very pumped indeed. We've got two teams to look forward to straight in next season. The Western Melbourne group. Of course, these franchises, if you like, are going to come up with names and colours and all that over the next 12 to 18 months, depending on which club it is, of course. MacArthur, Southwest Sydney. That's a mouthful. Hopefully they'll give us a nice
You're
name.
Already thinking like a commentator straight away. How am I going to say that every week?
MSWS. Looking forward to seeing both of those clubs come in. So next year we get Melbourne derbies every what's the maths on that, Muzz? 5 or 6 weeks?
Yes, true.
How good?
Yes, true. You're the full unit maths expert. You do it quickly. Andy Harper, you've been a massive pro-expansionist, if such a word exists, pro-exhibitionist, but you're a pro-expansionist, so you must be excited today as well.
Well, I'm present, firstly, Muzz, to answer your question. I can barely contain myself, to be honest.
I can tell.
Firstly, to hear Mike Cockerell's voice again sets the tone perfectly for today and the new chapter that we in the game in behind these two new clubs are going to create for football fans, for sports fans in Australia. This is great news. And I don't think it's out of place to say that there was a little bit of nervousness, maybe a lot of nervousness from some of us around the place that the board might have deferred altogether. But I tell you what, just watching the press conference and listening to the new chairman, Chris Nicu and David Gallop, flanked on one side and Greg O'Rourke on the other, they've burst through the tape on this one. I'm thrilled for them. I'm thrilled for the game. I'm generally thrilled.
All right, I'll stay with you, Harps. Let's break it down. The two successful bids. We'll start with the one that will enter into the competition next year, season 2019-2020, and that is Western Melbourne. You'd have to say there was a lot of talk that Team 11 were probably the favourites, and Western Melbourne are probably, if you want to talk like that, the outsider that have entered the competition.
They've become Team 11.
Yes, exactly. The point that you made is that Western Melbourne are now going to be Team 11. What do you think of it, Harps?
Well, firstly, to Team 11, I hope they maintain the rage because I can still see a place for them in the league, most certainly. And I, as tough as today is for them, I hope it doesn't mean that they roll up their swag. That's their business, but that would be my hope. I've got to say I'm completely surprised. I rang people from the West Melbourne consortium yesterday before the board meeting, and I rang them because I believe the speculation that Team 11 was going to get the nod. That's what everyone had been saying and writing, and not being close to any of the bids really, like most of us, I was just, you know, operating off what was being said and speculated. And the mail for Team 11 was so strong that I rang Lou Sticker, who's been central to the Western Melbourne bid, as much as to offer condolences, actually, and to try and encourage him to stick in for the long term if they didn't get the nod. And the fact that Lou, he didn't know it was that they hadn't been announced yet, obviously, but the fact that he was still talking bullishly about being right in the whole contest still sort of surprised me then. And I was really surprised this morning at lunchtime to hear that news and the speculation that brewed this morning. But here we go. This is going to change the course of history of the game, the game's history in this country, because what will happen at West Melbourne now will be a carbon copy of what the Wanderers did in Parramatta, and that was the Western Sydney Wanderers, not the Parramatta Eels of the NRL, were so strong and robust that it was their organisation that demanded a new stadium in Parramatta. And now we've gone in the league to a new level where private investment is going to solely own and operate an A-League venue, a football venue. And I'm going to predict here and now that that is going to change the course of the history of sport in this country, because when this works to the level that it is going to work, then other investors around the league will be less nervous and more boisterous about investing in their own facilities, because they'll see exactly what it can do for them. We are about to watch history change in this country.
Speedy, do you agree with Harps that the prospect of a stadium that's owned by the club, and David Gallop made mention of this in the press conference today, is a very exciting prospect for the Hyundai A-League and the future of the Hyundai A-League?
And our colleague Simon Hill has been banging on about it for a long time. He's saying we need purpose-built boutique stadiums for these A-League clubs, and that's what's on the horizon, and it is going to happen. That's part of the blueprint that they've provided to get into the A-League. The Western Melbourne Group going to have that purpose-built stadium, and we can't wait for it to come along. In the meantime, they'll be playing at Cardinia Park in Geelong, and we've been there a lot recently, maybe one or two times a year, and a wonderful playing surface. Hopefully they can get that right as well to get those fans on board and with the excitement to look forward to being in their own stadium in the years to come.
Harps, back to you. You know Lou Sticker well. You worked with him briefly in your time at Sydney FC. Tell us a bit about Lou, because looking at it from afar, he's played this campaign very, very well.
Well, you know, we have to make that assessment because we don't know actually the financial bona fides of the bid or the licence fee. I mean, who knows who was playing chicken with whom in the end. What I know about Lou is he's a very effective organiser. He gets things done. He gets things done according to the terms of reference that he sets out or are set out for him. He's, with his consortium, have pulled off an amazing coup here with the land package and the stadium development and the funding, not tied to any public largesse. And that's why I'm so excited about it. But it's not just what I think, Muzz, with respect to your question. Listening again to Chris Nicu presenting that decision on behalf of the board at the press conference today. And if you sift through a lot of the comments that were made, Chris made a very important one about both bids. About the people involved who've got experience in football, who've got demonstrable passion for football and success in football. And that was a very important thread in what Chris was presenting to the media there. And he was at least in part talking about Lou Sticker, who's got runs on the board as far as organising football at a professional level. So I've got, without, again, looking under the bonnet and knowing the financials behind it, et cetera, I've got 100% confidence that this one's going to fly big.
Lou Sticker brought Alessandro Del Piero to the A-League, Speedy, and Dwight York and several others. So you can guarantee that this Western Melbourne group are going to probably start with a fairly large, big-name marquee, which is exciting. Yeah. There is some talk about Celtic's Scott Brown being their first marquee because it appeals to the local market. What are you expecting there? Let's start the speculation because fans love this. Who's coming? Who's going to be their big-name player? What Aussies are they going to get? This is all what we're going to be talking about for the next 8 months. And I should also point out, too, that they're going to have to start signing players within the next few weeks. So as soon as this January transfer window opens, they're going to have to start signing players. Otherwise, my understanding is, and correct me if I'm wrong, they'd have to wait till whatever that is, June, July, where you almost need to be starting your training ahead of next season. So we're talking immediately having to go out there and start signing some players.
Yeah, it looks like they won't be in the FFA Cup next year, so just get right for round one of the A-League. That'll be the motivation. But just on the Scott Brown chat, fine, bring him here under the cap. Marquee.
Yeah.
Turn it up.
I'm inclined to agree.
Who is talking at this Scott Brown marquee stuff?
But Lou knows the market. So if there's a, you know, if there's a passionate, you know, Scottish fan base out there, maybe that's what he's trying to attract.
Maybe.
Well, maybe that's the case. Maybe KSK Honda will have changed his view watching the impact of him over the last couple of weeks. Suffice to say, Muzz, you're right. All these ducks would have at least been ready to knock over with a positive announcement. I'm talking about Lou Sticker and his network, his scouting network. He will they'll be ready to roll out a series of names from coaches and whatnot down from whatever moment they decide is the time to go. A lot of this stuff, the heavy preparation, would have already been undertaken. I just want to backtrack quickly because I don't want anyone listening to this misinterpreting my interpretation of Chris Nicu and the football people involved, because I don't want people to think I'm saying that one of the things that killed other bids or was a red light at this point for other bids was they didn't have football people involved in them. Let me get that out clear and now. But what is interesting is that this is a point of focus for the board as they look to assess things. So I thought that was very encouraging, and hopefully the bids that missed out should be encouraged by that as well.
There's plenty of questions, obviously, that need to be sorted between now and their entry into the A-League in October of 2019. One of them will be the makeup of the competition. You'd assume that we now have 30 rounds of five games, so an extra three rounds and every team gets a bye, which means because we have split rounds at the moment, you wouldn't need the split rounds because if they can organise the byes around the Asian Champions League, the window of the A-League season won't have to change. So you'd assume that's what's probably going to happen, but there's a conversation.
That's your feel. Greg O'Rourke at the press conference goes, there's five options for the draw, and that included having just home and away each 20 games.
Yeah, so but that's because, as he points out, there's five options. Those conversations haven't started yet, so they need to work out the length and breadth of the season and obviously, you know, where the money comes exactly for the extra 15 games, et cetera, et cetera. I guess the other question is, are they going to have a W League team? So do we now have 10 W League teams rather than 9? We've got 11 A League teams as of next season. But do we now have the round even 10? I haven't seen anything about that. I'd assume that they would be working towards having a W League team. Harps, you got any idea there?
Well, we could only presume that, Muzz. And it does seem to work well. But can I get very clear on the record that I am of the view that it shouldn't be expected of A League clubs to have W League teams if they don't want to. I mean, they work nicely together, and I love the double headers, and it's fantastic if clubs do that. And I'm going to presume that West Melbourne will do that.
No, fair point.
But I don't think necessarily
Canberra's existing nicely without an A-League side.
Exactly my point. And why wouldn't there be other organisations? I can think of a couple off the top of my head at university level who might actually see competition at a W League as something within their grasp. But the expense of an A-League is not something that they're interested in. So why would you cut one out because you have to present two, if you know what I mean? So I'm going to presume they'll go down the W-League track. But for me, unless they've signed off on it as part of the club participation agreement, I wouldn't say that's an expectation.
That comment you just made about Canberra United having a W-League team and no A-League team, that hurts because they've missed out, Muzz.
We'll get to them.
Quite a few have.
We'll get to them. Right, we're focused on Western Melbourne. Let's look at Macarthur, Southwest Sydney, who'll come in the year after. The reasons being that they want to give the Western Sydney Wanderers time to bed down into the new stadium, which I think is fair enough, given that they've spent the last 3 years being nomadic, literally the Wanderers.
But I'm looking at that and I'm going, imagine having another club in your neck of the woods, 50 k's as the crow flies between Campbelltown and Parramatta Stadium. Mm. That's a big distance. Imagine having those teams play each other three times next year when the new stadium has been built, and one's at Campbelltown, the first one at Campbelltown, it introduced the new club, and then two at a packed out Parramatta Stadium. Wouldn't that be awesome next year?
It would be a great way to start the new stadium, as in the first game at the new stadium, you're playing your crosstown rivals. Yeah. But you're happy giving them another year?
But I can also say, why not just bring it in now? If Western Melbourne's ready to go, why isn't Macarthur ready to go?
Harps, what's your take?
Look, firstly, my very stated position clearly is I'm happy that at least we've got one. So everything you said makes a lot of sense, Speedy, right? I'm going to defer in favour of the decision that's been handed down, and this is why. Not because I think the Wanderers need any more time, because geographically the Western Sydney Wanderers are closer to the centre part of Sydney than they are Campbelltown. So that whole crossover of boundaries is not an argument I've ever bought, right? And I agree with you on that. David Gallop made the point, which is a salient one, that at the moment we've got two A-League teams in Sydney who are both without a home, and it's incredibly, incredibly distracting, and it's incredibly ineffective. And it is only a short-term pain, we realise, but it's painful nonetheless. And so I'm supportive of the decision if in their wisdom they think this is just going to help the Sydney thing settle down a little bit, because at the moment it's in a complete state of flux. I think we'd all agree with that. But more importantly, to listen again to Chris Nicu, and I just think his performance in this press conference, maybe a little bit nervous, but the content of what he said was rock solid. And by staggering this entry, what FFA can afford to do is pile more resources behind getting one going and then turning that attention to the next one the year after. So Western Melbourne are going to get all the help that can be possibly given out of head office for next season. And when that one's up and running, they can divert the same level of resource, human resource, IP, all that sort of stuff, with complete focus to the southwest of Sydney. And I find it very difficult to argue with that logic.
Yep. And if you're a journalist or a television broadcaster, you've basically got a year and a half now of speculation and stories coming out of those two bids that can keep football in the back pages over the journey. Let's look at the teams that missed out. So we touched on Team 11, Canberra, Southern Expansion and South Melbourne. What's the future there, do you believe, Harps? I mean, obviously, we're going to start talking in years to come about Teams 13 and 14, probably a few years down the track. But do they pack up their swag and go, or do they keep building on what they've done?
Well, I hope they don't, actually. Well, I think the future of Southern Expansion as a Sydney property is, I can't see that being resuscitated from here. But that investment group and that football IP with Craig Foster, you would like to think, if there's still the energy, can be applied to another marketplace. I can't see it bearing any fruit in Sydney from this point on, to personal view. I love the idea of Canberra in the league. I would like to think it's a matter of time. But I would be revising history if I changed my tack on my ideas for the strategy of the league, and that is the next bout of expansion, or the next immediate target for expansion, needs to be to create big city derbies in Adelaide, in Brisbane and in Perth, not necessarily in that order. And so if I'm at FFA, the first two priorities now are getting the two new teams running and well-oiled. And I think that's well within their capacity, and I'm very excited about that. In the meantime, as they've discussed today at the press conference again, this the idea of a second-tier competition plus where we go for expansion, I firmly believe and can only reiterate my point that Brisbane needs competition, Perth needs competition, and Adelaide needs competition, and that's where some of the next teams should be based.
I agree with you on that one. I've been banging on about an Adelaide with that football culture and a Brisbane with that football culture, and Perth, for that matter. Derbies in those cities. We've seen what derbies have done for Sydney and Melbourne. Why can't it happen in those other spots? But I suppose the carrot for those clubs, or those franchise, would-be franchises that have missed out, is that it keeps on coming up. Wellington, how long will they last? Could they be gone in a year or two's time? And then one of these teams obviously looks ready-made to slot in for them. Is that something you see as being feasible?
Absolutely. And I think that's probably where your Canberras, et cetera, are at. There might be the opportunity, depending on what happens with Wellington in the future. I mean, Harp's talked about Brisbane. It would make sense that that should also be a priority, putting a second team in Brisbane. So it becomes a bit more strategic, would you not agree, Harps, now, rather than just necessarily who's left over?
Yeah, and, you know, I agree with myself completely there, Martin.
Yeah, yeah.
it's like you said and it's like he said. What I would love the new working model to do, when the clubs, whatever degree of autonomy comes with this separation of powers, FFA to A-League, I think in a couple of years' time, actually, I'll get the crystal ball out, I think this whole discussion is going to change significantly, because I think these two new clubs, indeed, I think if it was two of the other bids that they gave the green light to, it's going to significantly change people's frames of reference. Instead of us talking down the dangers of expansion and constantly focusing on Gold Coast and North Queensland, I think this process is going to put our focus back where it should have been, and that's what the success of the Wanderers were initially. And as these two as reincarnations of that, are really going to excite the marketplace. The point I'm making, Muzz and Speedy, is that with that excited marketplace changes the investment profile of the league completely. So on the one hand, you might get a whole longer queue of football investment ready to jump into the A-League. But on the back of that, I would like it to be considered by the new business model of the A-League, whether it's the clubs running it or however it works out, that it's actually the organisation that finances and starts these start-up clubs, like FFA did with the Wanderers. The IP that is going, that is already and will be added to in the next two, three, 4 years about this stuff is invaluable. And so why wouldn't the new A-League business model make the investment itself, start a club in Brisbane or Adelaide or Perth or all three, and then when they've reached some level of maturation, they sell that to an investor? Because you can control the process. And I really think the discussion around these situations in the next 2 to 3 years, because of the decision made today, is going to change the frame of reference completely.
The good thing that's happened today is that we will be talking about expansion probably every week for the next 18 months. And let's hope that the two new clubs drip feed information week by week that gets us all excited about their entry into the competition, because we're excited about it at the moment. Let's go back to the traditional A-League W League review slash preview. I want to start with your players that you enjoyed watching last weekend, which does seem a long time ago. And Harps, you wanted to start on the W League in Newcastle.
Yeah, well, the Jets are struggling a little bit. So a couple of their star players. And one of them is their import, Katie Stengel, who I think is a terrific player. She's a rare commodity in women's football. Because we watch A-League and comment on men's football, we talk about the old-fashioned centre forward, and she's even more outstanding in the women's game because they don't really have that prototype. But she's a fantastic centre forward, great close control, fantastic game awareness. This is just my opinion, but the goals have really dried up, and the pressure was starting to build. Now the team itself hasn't been great. Maybe the lack of Katie's goal scoring has been part of that. But she got a good one on the weekend, a really good goal, set the game up nicely. Melbourne City too good in the end. But I have been impressed with her as a footballer ever since she started here. I think she's one out of the box. I'm glad Newcastle retained her. And it was a good goal to score, and hopefully that can change her personal form and then the influence on the team. So she's my player of this week.
And Harps bringing up an American jogs my memory. Lo Labonta, who's been starring with the Western Sydney Wanderers, was a wonderful guest last night on Bill and Boz. And I was fortunate enough to meet her before that first Sydney derby at the start of the season. Just went out and chatted to some players before training. And she is the most delightful sports person that I've met this year. What a wonderful ambassador for the code.
Is she your player to watch?
No, I just thought I'd throw that in off the back.
Actually, your player to watch, we may as well just record this. Phil, just record this, and we'll just run this in every week, because I think Speedy's going to mention this bloke every week. There's a bit of a man crush.
Yep, the red and black again, Lo Labonta and now Alex Baum-Johann. This guy is just unbelievable. I said in the call last week, he's the most consistent, brilliant passer I think the A-League has ever had, because he barely misses one. And these are through balls, giving the likes of Kamau and Soterio the chance to run onto these through balls that players the world over find hard to pull off, and he's pulling them off on a regular basis every 5 minutes or so. It's phenomenal what he's doing.
Have you changed your view on Baum-Johann, Harps? And I'm going to drop you in it, because I did text you after round one and say, I like this bloke. I think he's even better than Martinez, who they, of course, had two seasons ago that we all fell in love with. Are you now prepared to say Baum-Johann is greater than Martinez?
No.
But... Stick to your guns. I like it.
But hang on a minute. And I'm surprised Speedy's gone off so early, because we're seven games in.
We love a big call, Harps.
We're seven games in. He has shown he's got plenty. I think we all agree with that. I certainly do. I know, and Speedy loves him. I love him too. He's shown he's got plenty.
Okay, suck it up to him now.
No, but you know what? He's got to it's got to actually become a thread of consistency, right? And so I think I'm expecting that we're just going to be completely going off about this bloke because of what he's actually delivered over the course of the journey, not going off about him because of what we think he might be able to do, blah, blah, blah. And he's done some fantastic things. I'm not I couldn't argue with that. I'm just as excited as anyone. But, you know, Martinez in a poor team at the start of the Wanderers malaise, he did it for most of the season as far as I'm concerned. And once Bo Myohan's done that again, he'll probably end up better than Martinez.
Murray Shaw, can he get to the heights of the player that you like to watch this weekend?
Well, he's got a long way to go. I was in Perth for Perth versus Melbourne City, and it'll come as no surprise to anyone who's watched the A-League over the last couple of years that my player that I enjoyed watching on the weekend was the one and only Diego Castro, former Johnny Warren medalist, obviously making a starting return to Perth glory on the weekend. We all know about his skill. We all know about his touches. We've all seen the highlights reel of Diego Castro. What I noticed about him on the weekend was he was putting in a lot of work. He was putting in a lot more work than I reckon we've seen over the last couple of years. Now, whether we can put that down to the popification of Perth Glory and they're all buying in that you need to work your socks off to have success, but Diego Castro throwing himself around, I think he got yellow carded for a pretty ugly challenge, actually, at one stage in the match, but he was definitely tracking back, trying to win tackles, picking the ball up and getting him going. It was vintage Diego Castro. And if you want a big call, maybe this will be Diego Castro's best year in the A-League. You love a big call.
Really?
Well, potentially. Obviously, he's missed the first few rounds, so it might be a bit difficult for him to pick up a Johnny Warren medal. The big story, I guess, coming out of the weekend, Harps, you were in Newcastle. Do Brisbane have some serious concerns? There's been a bit of talk this week that maybe they're under pressure and they start the round of A-League with a big match against the Melbourne Victory.
Yeah, it's a really tough one to start the game, but such is the nature of sport sometimes. They're just as likely to win and surprise everyone against Melbourne Victory. Look, I'm not panicking about Brisbane. I think they've got one or two deficiencies, but which team doesn't? I firmly believe John Aloisi is a great coach. I have no doubt that the club's in much better condition now than it was 12 months ago when, let's face it, they were being held together by a bit of sticky tape. So he's steered them through that. He's built good foundations. I think he's got a very good team, but I think they lack a bit of explosivity, explosiveness, whatever is the word.
Did you make up a word?
I like the second one.
I like explosivity. I'm writing that down.
I don't know where they get that.
We'll get that into next week's opener.
I like Wenzel Halls, who came on.
Agreed.
He's got explosivity.
He does. That's why I brought him up, because I really believe Johnny set this team up well. It's a very technical team and there's not a lot of technical weaknesses around the team as far as I can see, but they don't have the explosivity, and maybe Wenzel Halls can be dropped in for more game time to change the gears a bit, because if they can change the gears, their game will change. Now, get back to the Newcastle game. They had some outstanding periods in that first half. Speedy, what about that save from Glenn Moss? If they go one up, and history's already very clear on the fact that you don't often lose matches from a goals advantage, and Brisbane's second halves have been great. So Glenn Moss really saved the Jets. And with the game still in the balance and Brisbane attacking Newcastle's goal, I should say not overly convincingly, but nevertheless they had players and possession. And that second goal, the breakaway off the mat, Matty Mackay rebounded shot. I thought if Georgeski was stopped for fouling Matt Mackay, there wouldn't have been a lot of argument, right? That was a contentious moment. The ref, and fair enough to him, decided, play on, that's fair enough. I'm not making big bones about this, right, by the way, but the game turned on that, and 2-0 becomes a much more difficult thing, obviously, in their current state of mind. So there's context for me that Brisbane are way short of panic stations. But they have got to turn the dial, and Wenzel Halls is the man who's going to do it for them.
And I remember Ramat Akbari coming on and doing something similar to what Wenzel Halls is doing, and then we never saw Ramat Akbari again for the Brisbane Roar for a long time. So it's standing out. Wenzel Halls has to get significant game time and see where that works for Brisbane. So that's...
So for whom, Speedy? For whom?
Well, Enrique started last week. Because Taggart came off the bench under an injury cloud. So Wenzel Hall's got to get game time before Enrique at the moment, significant game time. Enrique can play 20-minute cameos, but Wenzel Hall's, give him an hour.
What about you? I'd punt the Dane, Mickelson, actually.
Yeah, I haven't been impressed by Mickelson so far this season. I think Speedy makes a point too, and I think it was a point that was made on A-League Hour on Monday night that Enrique's not the man to lead the line. You know, he's great coming off a bench and he's going to create something, et cetera, et cetera. But obviously they're forced into it, given the extent of injuries. But I also agree with you, Harps. I don't think if I'm a Brisbane Roar fan that there's too much need to panic. And in fact, it's almost become a Brisbane trait, hasn't it? To start a season slowly and then storm home. And we saw Melbourne Victory do exactly the same thing last year and win the grand final.
And the comment, I think it was made on the Monday podcast, Luke De Vere, as a Socceroo not that long ago, he's allegedly fully fit and he's not even featuring.
I thought Connor O'Toole was also very good on Sunday, your man, Speedy, that you've talked up before.
What about the chameleon? How good's he going?
Papadopoulos at the back? Yeah. Well, there's got no problems there. The problems just seem to be further forward up the pitch, if you know what I mean. They seem to be creating a lot, but not getting the ball in the back of the net. The big surprise on the weekend, well, it wasn't a surprise to some, was Wellington getting over the top of Sydney FC. I thought it was interesting if you looked at the progression of the two coaches on the sideline. So they're two debut A-League coaches having their first year in the A-League in Steve Corica and Mark Rudin. Both got there via different paths. Steve Corica has been at Sydney FC. He's a legend of the club. He was an understudy to Graham Arnold. Mark Rudin went and did the hard yards at NPL level, finally got himself a gig at Wellington. Can we read anything into that, Harps? Is there a better way of going? Is there an ideal way to go about being a coach? Do you need experience in the NPL to make the big decisions during the 90 minutes? Or can you learn enough being an assistant to a great coach as Graham Arnold obviously was?
You can do it both ways. I mean, Kevin Muscat, as far as I know, went straight from playing into the coaching ranks at Melbourne Victory and has been hugely successful. Johnny Aloisi, the same. And so, you know, it's obviously helped Mark Rudin. He's in a difficult gig over there at Wellington, and it was a resounding performance and huge congratulations to him. But, you know, one hot day doesn't make a summer, and let's hope for Rudin and the Phoenix they can back up. Similarly, I don't see too much to worry about with Sydney. They've been hammered by a couple of key injury blows. The semi-final of the Cup against the Wanderers, which they ended up winning, I said in commentary then that I just thought they lacked, which led into our pre-season predictions for the comp. And I sort of thought Sydney would be fine, but Corica would need to file the edge back into the team. I just thought they lacked a little bit of edge.
Well, if you look at that game, hindsight is a wonderful thing. Sydney FC were very flat in the first half of that FFA Cup semi, and then Sim De Jong releases Trent Mahaja. Yeah. To set up the first goal. Now, Sydney FC, no Trent Bahaja. Sydney FC, as of last weekend, had got very little out of Sim De Jong.
Yes. You're agreeing with me completely, and that's why I like you, Murray. Because
you're a very wise man, Andrew.
The Wanderers at the start of that game could have put that cup out of reach, the cup semi-final out of reach, and that's been a threat to the Wanderers' story. So, Sydney have been hit those two key injuries. This is not revising history. I said at the time that I thought they'd just lost a bit of edge, and it was Corica's job to put his own stamp on the team and get that edge back. And I think basically that succeeded in that to a degree up until the Wellington game, and it came unstuck from a Sydney viewpoint spectacularly. I mean, they haven't defended as a group that badly and importantly been punished on the back of it for a long time. So I would imagine some harsh lessons have been learned through the week. I'd be very surprised if it happens again, but this is not the difference between the coaching pathway, Muzz, as a reflection of, I think, the difference of a coach moving into the legacy left by the predecessor, if you know what I mean. Rudin had a lot more work, a lot more room to move, considering the coaching vacancy he filled. Steve Corica, in that sense, was on a hiding to nothing. Don't you agree?
Very true. Well,
what both coaches had to do to get to their role is get the A licence, didn't they? You've got to have an A licence to be an A-League coach.
Pro licence.
I beg your pardon. But and you just went and did your A licence recently. And do you have a pro licence, Harps?
No.
So an A-League licence, same sort of principle. You turn up there and you have practical scenarios, or you know, you look at a game and you say, I have some defenders who aren't exactly pacey, and they're a little slow, in my back four, my central defenders, and the opposition are turning up here with really fast strikers, Roy Krishna. So what style of game are you going to play, Steve Corica, if you're coaching Sydney FC here? Are you going to play a high line with your slow defenders against the fast-paced attackers? Or is that too simple to look at it that way? Why on earth did they play a high line?
No, Speedy, that's not too simple at all. That's a very reasonable assessment, right? And the coaches, when they go through their badges, do all these game scenarios. There's no question about that. However, Graham Arnold's teams routinely played a high line. Same personnel apart from Van der Linden. Now, he's not necessarily slower than the guy he replaced. And we're still talking about Alex Wilkinson, who has just been as reliable as ever since forever. And Michael Zullo, who's still as sharp up and down the left flank, and I'm mentioning these guys because they got caught out for the goals. You know, it's not the problem with the back four, apart from you freeze frame the goal moment, Speedy, and players are out of position. My problem with Sydney, and what was not worrying me so much, but my diagnosis was that I thought Brillante and Brendan O'Neill in the centre of midfield were not nearly as clinical and haven't been under Steve Corica as they were under Graham Arnold. I reckon if you got the freeze frame on the screen and you cut the screen up into grids and where the defence is starting, etc., there wouldn't be a whole heap of difference in the model from Arnold to Corica.
Okay. Now I was going to say, Harps, because it leads us into a preview of the Sydney Derby this weekend, which looks fascinating because for the first time in history, Sydney FC head in on the back of a loss while Western Sydney head in on the back of a win. Mm. There's been talk that Steve Corica needs to perform major surgery, whether that is Van der Linden being rested, which is what Bozza is pushing for, and Nick Ansell coming in to replace Van der Linden, who's copped
Nick Ansell.
Calver, which is Van der Linden has copped a fair bit of criticism for his performance against Wellington. There's also been some sort of talk that does Steve Corica need to change things up to the extent that do you need Brillante and O'Neill sitting in front of your back four, or do Sydney FC, who aren't creating a lot of chances at the moment, maybe need to play a diamond in midfield so that they've got more going forward? I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, I'd have to check the stats, that Milos Ninkovic has had less than 40 touches the last couple of weeks, and it's only happened six times in his entire A-League career, two of which have been in the last couple of weeks. He's not getting on the ball enough. So what sort of surgery would you perform if you're Steve Corica, or would you not perform any surgery?
There aren't too many options squad-wise, are there? You know, you want to get Sim De Jong playing more minutes, and he wanted Bahadur pre-season. You've got a limited squad. You can't have a 35-man squad like Van Bommel's got at PSV, for instance. You've got to have 23 men or somewhere around that vicinity. So when they lost Bahadur, it lost one element of the game style, and also Mirzaevsky and Alex Brosk and Ninkovic were all on the same page last year. So you don't have that understanding of able to bounce the 1-2s where Ninkovic's passes go through the roof. But after last week's performance, you probably do need to change something, and you've got all week on the training pitch to do that. It'll be interesting to see what Corica comes up with.
Final word on this one, Harps, what would you do?
Well, I'd love to have some stats on this, because my sense is that unless Milos Ninkovic was winning the ball himself in those chase backs and recovery runs, which we've seen him do plenty, he really puts in for his team. But my sense is that he was getting a lot more possession in transition because of the cutout work that O'Neill and Brillante were doing in midfield around halfway when the other team won the ball and looked to pass forward. Those two, for the last 2 years, have been like tigers. And, you know, there are individuals who aren't playing well, but I reckon the centre of Sydney's cause at the moment is probably going under the radar as being as off as anything. And it's those two young guys who've been outstanding for the last couple of years have not been as good this year. And once they start dominating the middle of the park, once they start cornering opposing teams at halfway and the sideline, winning the ball, muscling opponents out of the ball and feeding Ninkovic from there, we might see a different Milos Ninkovic.
I think the Wanderers are a big chance this weekend. I'm sure you'd both agree. Patrick Ziegler certainly gave them some starch at the back, if you like, and I think that is going to be a fascinating clash at 7:30 on Saturday night. Do you give, just very quickly, both of you, do you give the Wanderers a hope? Because they've been whipping boys in this
massive hope in recent years. I think off the back of what happened last week in the respective games, you'd almost make them favourites.
Harps?
Yeah, I think they've got a great opportunity, really do. And, look, I don't know if they've got the depth across the park, but Ziegler offers them a lot of leadership, and that's what they've lacked. And they don't want to dump everything in the lap of the, what do you call him, an Aussie-German, an Osman. But he's given them a lot, and I'd like to think the Wanderers can start favourite for once.
And this, we should all hail Thomas Broich, that documentary, Tom Meets Zizou, which they came out and followed him playing with the Brisbane Roar. Suddenly that goes back to Germany and gets widespread exposure, including from footballers, including Ziegler, who go, that looks like a pretty good option. Here he is in his late 20s.
Enjoyed watching him last week. Socceroos, big news. No Aaron Mooy for the Asian Cup. My understanding is that next week, the squad for the Australian squad for the Asian Cup will be announced. Aaron Mooy won't be there, and there's some question marks over whether Tom Rogic will be there. Who does that open the door for, both of you? The obvious one would be Terry Antonis.
Yeah, I think Antonis comes in for Aaron Mooy pretty simply. And if there's no Rogic, I think the door opens for Economides. Denny Jeanrose, another one who's been on the fringes, playing regularly in Holland. Can he come in and play an Aaron Mooy type of role? Does he get in the 23? But I think on current form, Antonis is going to be very hard to leave out. My understanding is that squad's announced on Tuesday or Wednesday, and it will be a 23. There'll be no more, you know, players. No more headlines about these three players got cut. And that's something that Josh Berlanti has suffered twice. And you can't underestimate what effect that has had on the young man. Unfortunately for him, missed out on two World Cup squads at the death.
How big a blow, Harps?
Yeah, certainly. I just concur with Speedy and to Josh Berlanti. That's a very fair point. Well made, Speedy. Terry Antonis on this form was going to be hard to leave out anyway. He's got to be if he stays fit, he's got to be a dead set cert from here. I like the flirtations with Economides as an option. You scoring goals is just worth so much for a guy's confidence, and he offers great dynamism. And yeah, maybe, is it Rustich, the guy who's in Holland talking about going to England?
Yep.
I'd be keeping an eye out for him possibly, but how many spots are up for grabs? We've been through this before. We've only got two spaces based on our former prognostications because of the injuries to those two players. We wish them well, and in their absence, I think Antonis and Economides.
Last Friday in the W League, Harps, I'm sure you saw it, Western Sydney Wanderers playing Canberra out at Spotless. The goalkeeper goes down with an injury. The ball's not out. Ellie Carpenter picks it up, whacks it in from 30 yards and celebrates. Fair enough, or should she have put the ball out? What's your thoughts, you two?
I was there and I didn't like it. I think back to the Paolo Di Canio moment when he sees, was it the goalkeeper out of play or was it a defender?
No, I think it was when he caught it.
Yeah.
Well, that's a very good question.
I think it might have been the goalkeeper.
Yeah, I think it was the goalkeeper.
And so he's got an empty net to shoot at, and he just plucks the ball out of the air and tells the referee, I'm stopping play because I don't think it's right for us to go on. I think that's the way to approach that. Jada Wyman buckled. She thought she'd done a serious knee injury, just the way her body felt. So she's not getting up. And when a goalkeeper's prone, I think if you see that, then you put the ball out. Did Ellie Carpenter see that? Or did she just see, wow, empty net? I'm having a crack here. How good? And then, the goalkeeper was down. Too bad.
All right. So Speedy's gone with, I would have put it out. Harps, I know your views on kicking the ball out.
I would have picked it up and gone for Paolo Di Canio. Trying to get the accolades.
Trying to get the sportsmanship award at the end of the year.
Don't put it out. Don't put it out. Pick it up and make yourself a trophy. Like
Harps, you wouldn't have put it out, would you?
I would never have been in that situation, but I'm...
What, playing a W League game?
I decided not to play for an open goal in mixed indoor when I was at university, if that counts.
Memories. Good.
No, I'm with Ellie Carpenter. And, Speedy, my view is even if she did see the goalkeeper was down, so what? It's sport. It's what happens. If someone...
That's the ruthless nature that took him to the top, Speedy.
No, it's not. And this is actually the principle that underpins my very strong belief in this is that is the hypocrisy and the duplicity of players.
You love this.
Because, I knew this was right in your wheel arch. Well, your Joe B. wheelhouse, this one.
Well, please convince me I'm wrong. But we have this convention in modern football where, someone's down, so we kick the ball out. But there is no such convention from other players to go down and feign injury to kill the clock.
Well,
now, I'm not saying Jada Wyman was in this class of trying to kill the clock. But there is this duplicity amongst players that it's not sporting-like to carry on when you know a team's down to 10 people. But it is acceptable to stop an attack because, well, I need a rest or my team's under the pump. You can't have it both ways.
I agree.
And I would much rather the teams play on and just score goals. Because if someone gets injured, that happens in sport. Unless it's life-threatening, then and I'm consistent on that too. If it's life-threatening, someone's got smashed in the head or whatever, stop the game immediately. But it's in the referee's hands. It should not be in the player's hands.
I agree with you, Harps. I don't have a problem with her playing on because if we kick the ball out every time someone went down injured, the game would be going for 3.5 hours.
But the goalkeeper changed the scenario or not?
My only problem with it was I don't think I'd celebrate scoring that goal.
If Wyman had done her ACL and was out for a year, would your opinion change?
No.
Not at all.
If it's a head injury, different story. Yeah. And that's at the referee's discretion. But I don't think you kick the ball out every time someone goes down. But as I said, my only problem with it was I don't think I would have celebrated kicking the ball into an empty net with the goalkeeper down. All right, we've got to wrap things up.
Just about this one, Speedy. So a team's emptied their bench. Then they lose another player with a knee injury. What, do you sportingly take your team down to 10 players? No, you play with an advantage.
This is a one-off scenario in a 10-second snapshot of the game. And if you see a goalkeeper go down thinking they've done an ACL...
So what?
They're out of play. A goalkeeper nominally... Nominally, the goalkeeper would be in the box and catch that shot from Ellie Carpenter if she felt her knee was functioning at its rightful level.
So what? So then Jada can go down and nurse her knee. She's not going to die and the game goes on.
Her team cops a 1-0 deficit.
So what?
I like
it. You're the one banging on about not enough goals being scored, for Pete's sake.
Let's get ready to rumble. All right, we've got to go. Now, usually at this stage of the show, Speedy, you backflip on something that you've said earlier. Is there anyone that you particularly want to backflip on? The Speed Kominich backflip.
No, nothing really to
backflip on. Mesut Ozil from last week, are you smashed?
Mesut Ozil, how's he going?
He's playing a lot of Fortnite,
apparently. He might get a Europa League against this week.
He reckons it's part of his problem at the moment. He's playing too much Fortnite.
Yeah, right.
Which probably sums it up because he's not playing any football. All right, tonight we have W League at Cromer Park in Sydney with Sydney taking on Adelaide. Friday night, A League, Brisbane versus Melbourne Victory. Saturday's W League, Perth versus Newcastle. A League doubleheader is Wellington versus the Central Coast, followed by the Sydney Derby. On Sunday, we have a doubleheader in the A League with Newcastle playing Perth. And then that's followed by Adelaide versus Melbourne City, where you two will be. And at this stage, there's a W League game penciled for Brisbane, with Brisbane taking on the Melbourne Victory on Sunday, which is absolutely, I would say, no chance of playing.
What about Brisbane's Friday A League?
No, at this stage, as we go to air, Speedy, that game will still be underway because my understanding is that the weather's going to get bad in Brisbane on Saturday and Sunday. So the W League's probably no chance, but your A League's probably still good at this stage.
You reckon we'll be able to fly out of Brisbane on Saturday?
No, you're going to have to
row.
You're going to have to row. It's going to be the Fox Sports row. All right, time to go. Hope you all enjoy your football on the weekend. Thank you, Andrew.
Present.
Thank you, Brenton.
Thank you, Murray Shaw.
Daniel Garb and Simon Hill will be back on Monday, and we'll be back next week. See you then.